Welcome to another episode of Through the Web podcast. I'm your co-host, Tausif.
And I am Dagogo from Cold Fusion.
And this week, we want to do something a bit different as we plan to experiment a few ways how we want to do this podcast. Obviously, we'll have our regular podcast where we react to more trending news, whereas this one's just going deeper into one specific topic. Mm-hmm. And I'll let Mr. Cold Fusion himself introduce this one to us. Sure.
So this is just, you know, a bit of a general thought that I had while I was driving to visit my parents, actually. So I was thinking about culture and I guess global culture in a way, and just how the United States from the end of World War II was a vast economic empire, kind of, and literally the media dominated the landscape, whether it was music or film. And now that things are kind of changing and there's another empire, which is China, challenging the United States, it got me thinking about what will be the next power and media and influence over the culture, and got me thinking about like how that's going to play out and what will be next. But yeah, I feel like, you know, Korea's really the only candidate that's kind of broken through. Like some of the biggest music is from Korea, and they've had some huge films, but I believe that's something that's only been precipitated through the internet. And it will be interesting to see how this plays out.
Prior to the American influence or the global empire that they've built, it was the British Empire that was
British,
and they ruled the world for a majority of a few hundred years, at least to an extent.
Yeah, they had the best navy and ships. So,
And I'm originally from Bangladesh, where we were also colonized by the British Empire, so much so that even so we've got a few different education systems, and one of them is directly under either Cambridge or Oxford University. So there's the O-levels and the A-levels. So those who are, I think, outside of Australia or US would probably know these institutions a bit better, especially if you're listening from Southeast Asia, because it's a big thing. So we have the local board examinations that you can study, or you can choose to do the English medium stuff. So a lot of the stuff that we learned growing up was highly influenced by the British education system, so much so that you'd have references about British culture within them. Do you know about the IELTS system, the English language?
No.
Okay, so that's another standardized English language test that you would have to take to immigrate to certain countries. Right. So whether it's your university degree or anything, so you have to take that test and have to score a certain number. The worst part of it is that it expires every 2 years. Which makes no sense to me, because how do you forget English in 2 years, right? And expensive as well. It's like $300-$400, and you have to get a certain bandwidth to. Anyway, I digress. So that's how much influence they've had and still have to this day, because of their history and how they I don't want to say taught, but how they introduced the British culture into different parts of the world, and we carry it. Like I carry a lot of the things that I learned from them. And then simultaneously, we've had Cartoon Network growing up, which is purely American influence. We had Nickelodeon, purely American influence. Also the movies that we saw. So in a lot of ways, my upbringing was through both British and American culture. And a lot of the music that I listen to, a lot of the things that I consume are highly influenced by those two cultures. And I think because American culture is kind of taken over, but it has ruled also because of the tech that the companies that have the best tech in the world is from America. So they control that side of things as well. And, you know, look at advertising, media, music, like everything best, quote unquote, best that we think of is generally around those areas, or at least that's what the narrative is, right? Mm-hmm. But now, as you mentioned, it's changing a little bit. And I always thought that language played a huge part, because we were introduced to English at such an early age and the rest of the world was through British Empire, I think it was easier for us to adapt to the American culture to an extent because language was similar. How do you see Korea or China having that advantage, if at all, because we don't speak
the language? Yeah, and I think that's the thing that's kind of, in my mind, a big hurdle and kind of stopping it from taking over so easily because, yes, there may be like films and music that's doing really well, but if you can't really understand the language, it's like English is obviously the most widely spoken language and that, you know, Korean is quite minuscule. Yeah. So this is just me thinking, like I really can't see how it would really take over, but it's like something's happening and I'm not sure what the end looks like. But the reason I say that as well is because I see that, you know, in the 1980s and 1990s, like you'd look at American films and like, you know, people back then, like I remember when I was like really young and seeing some of that, you're just like, oh, it's so cool. Like America is so cool. Like the idea of it, like where, you know, everyone just seemed to have this aura about them, real confidence. And it was like the idea of America and what it stood for was just like so strong. Yeah. And it was like, it wasn't like how it's perceived now, like they're a bully that wants to take over. It kind of was different. It was like, they're the people that are just like, you know, like the top, you know, everyone wants to go to America. It was like New York and everything was the place to be. But then, you know, over the next couple of decades, it kind of slid and then now it's like a shadow of what it was. So it's like, you know, what's going to be the next thing that everyone kind of looks to? What's that country? And I don't know.
To your point, just as you mentioned, everything slid because now one of the more stereotypical narratives that we get is that, you know, the dumb Americans, obviously it's not, I'm not saying Americans are dumb, just to be clear. But that's one of the stereotypes you see on the internet, people saying, and there are even videos of, you know, like these, interviews where day-to-day Americans are approached and asked some very simple questions about the rest of the world. And I don't know if they're staged or not, to be fair, but that's the narrative that goes around. And that's a huge difference, as you mentioned, to what 80s and 90s looked like. Because you know, me growing up, as you mentioned, even now, like when I look at, think of New York, you look at Casey Neistat and Gary Vaynerchuk or whoever, like they've made New York into such a place. All the creative stuff happens there. Like that's the place to be, as you mentioned, still to an extent. Mm-hmm. And they've still kind of held on to that aspect, but it's, as you mentioned, slowly slitting away. Mm-hmm. Because when you look at a lot of the comments on the internet, people say, oh, Americans are the only people who think America is great. Mm-hmm. And to an extent that is true because, you know, there is that idea that rest of the world sucks and that's why they want to move to America. But like, would you move to America?
Not at the moment.
Yeah, same. Not at the moment, right? Yeah. Like I wouldn't do that now. Mm. But it seems to me that you're right, that slowly things are changing. With Korea though, sorry.
I was just going to say like when you were saying New York is the place to be and everything, I kind of feel like New York, you know, maybe I'm too in the weeds with Twitter and everything, but the commentary I'm seeing is like New York is sliding back to how it was in the 1970s where it was a terrible place. 1970s, 1980s, like horrific. And then
I've been seeing that as well.
Yeah. And then it kind of got revamped in the 90s and 2000s. Like for example, if you watch the show Seinfeld.
Yep.
So that was the old New York. So like late 80s, early 90s, horrible, dangerous place. And they'll talk about it. But then Friends is the new New York where it was like late 90s and everything was like cool clean and hip. So I think it's kind of going back to the 1970s in a way, but I just feel like, I don't know, like Korea as a place, like it's, I don't know. I'm actually not sure. I haven't looked into how the culture just erupted. I think Gangnam Style was probably one of the first major hits, was the largest viewed video on YouTube for a long time, but it was just a fluke. But then after that, like now more recently, like a lot of Korean shows are quite big.
Huge and then, on Netflix.
Yeah,
huge.
And then the Netflix stuff and Korean K-pop, obviously, that's humongous, breaking records on YouTube all the time. So it's like obviously it couldn't just be Korean people. This is a worldwide thing that's going on.
Absolutely.
So I'm not sure how it happened and I don't know where it's going.
But I feel it's almost like a reaction to the fact that, you know, like American, UK has just dominated everything for so long. Mm-hmm. Korea is kind of bringing in a something fresh.
Yeah, it's new. Yeah.
It's new to the scene. Mm-hmm. And what I like best about it is that they're not just closed off or isolated. They are trying to appear and appeal to a global audience, appeal to the Western side of things as well. So it's not just a one-way street where they're just making stuff and people are just picking up. They're actually making collaborations that work, right? And with, you know, for Parasite, for example, the one, the Oscars, like that was, again, one of the biggest first foreign film to win.
I believe so.
Yes. Obviously, on Netflix, we had the Squid Games from last year. So we're not talking about quality here per se, but the fact that more and more people are paying attention or watching it and just wanting to be in the know about these things. And if you look at BTS,
huge.
The numbers that they produce is astronomical, right? And then you look at the things that they're doing. So they've collaborated with Coldplay. They're likely to collaborate with Snoop Dogg as well.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Right. So things like that is, as I mentioned, like they are approaching a market where they're consciously making the strategic decisions. And I think Apple also opened the biggest store or the biggest Apple HQ in Southern Hemisphere in Seoul.
Okay.
Or they're planning to do that, if I'm not mistaken. So there's also that reverse angle where they're looking at, oh, how can we benefit from this emerging, you know, market? And the way I see it is, again, you know, coming from a from the brown diaspora, you know, we've had Hasan Minhaj and you know, Aziz Ansari, like these characters or these personalities rather are also taking shape within the American culture. So I think there's this need for alternative angle to, say, Friends and Seinfeld, that obviously looked at these homegrown local towns for so long. The diaspora is also kind of stepping up to an extent where you may not have people from India or Pakistan rising from within, but you have people representing that as well within the American culture with the context and subtext of a different culture emerging, right?
Yeah. And maybe it's like, maybe it's not the right way to think about it. Maybe what I'm thinking about is very 20th century where you have one power that's rising and one that's falling, whatever, in terms of like a media landscape. But maybe it's something completely different where it's like we just end up in like a extremely global world where it's kind of like things can pop up from everywhere and everyone's equally. Yeah, that's another thing that I just thought about then. But in that sense, it was kind of like what the 90s kind of wanted to be. If you remember, there's a specific genre of music called world music.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's kind of had like, you know, tablas and everything and another side of Middle East and stuff.
Huge in the UK. Yeah.
So it was like, that was kind of like, it was this idea like, oh, like, you know, internet was just coming out, people were connecting and it's like, oh, the world is here together.
Yes.
Like that, but then it kind of died off. But, but that's kind of, maybe we'll come to that point where everything's kind of mixing together and it's just this mix of all the stuff, which, yeah, maybe is something I didn't consider.
Yeah, I predict actually that a lot of the rising thing that you'll see will come from these diverse groups. And I think Korea obviously will have a big handle in that, but I think it'll also open up for areas around my, you know, like my diaspora. I mean, when I say my diaspora, it's the Southeast Asian brown culture, where there are lots of acts that are coming up with the idea of reaching a global audience, right? Some of the music, even going back to my personal background, which is in Bangladesh, like we had a very strong local music scene that never appealed to the global audience. But now, over the last 3-4 years, I'm seeing and hearing sounds from these individual artists all around the world. Like either they were brought up in the New York or even just moved like me to a different country, making music that appeals to a wider audience. And their audience aren't based in Bangladesh. Their audience is based in different, you know, in the UK, in the US, or their Spotify streams are all from all over the world, right? Mm-hmm. And I predict, like, I think that's going to be the next best thing is or next big thing is where you'll get a widely diverse range of creators and media and representation, almost, because there is that angle of wanting to do it forcibly, like, you know, like, oh, we have to have diverse people, like, you know, Friends, for example, is just all certain ethnic group and you don't see many other ethnicity in there. And that was one of the, I guess, complaints or criticisms of the show later in the decade. But I think now that will happen organically because there was that part where you were forcibly trying to include all these different groups. But I think people are just paying attention now to that, oh, like Korean music is actually cool. Korean shows are actually, some of the horror shows that they do.
It's a lot of horror. Yeah.
I don't know why though. I think it could be a cultural thing.
Yeah, maybe a reflection of something that's going on. I know South Korea does have a few problems with a few things, but I don't know if it's a reflection of that.
Because Japanese shows were very horror-based as well. Like what's the Grudge, I think? Was
I haven't seen that.
You haven't seen Grudge? No. Have you seen Grudge? It was in Grudge, Reagan. Come on, man. It was based on this Japanese horror film called Ju-On, I think it was. And like, if people thought Grudge was scary, like Ju-On is like 100 times more scary.
Right.
I'm not a big horror fan, anything of that sort, but that was the narrative. So you could see that how it kind of, like some of these Japanese movies kind of had, you know, planted seeds within the culture a little bit, and I think that might have helped.
Maybe.
I don't have the data to back my claims up.
But obviously there's a demand for it, so something's going on. I don't know.
No, for sure. And you know, we're based in Australia as well.
I just want to say, based in Australia. I pay attention to accents and voices. I've been hearing more Australian voices. I don't know, like, if people are just interested in the accent, because it's kind of been tucked away, and then over the past like 3-4 years, I've been hearing it more. This is just totally anecdotal, but just whether it's presenters or like just in weird things, I was like, oh, Australian accent, like kind of pick it up. So I don't know what that's about, but that's just something else.
Yeah, no, and my point was more to the angle that, you know, like when we've lived in Australia for a while now, but. Yeah. We haven't seen a lot of Australian representation in the global side of things, right? I think like movies and TV shows are just terrible locally. Sorry to the Australian listeners who's listening out. But if you have any good suggestions, do send my way. I've seen a couple of shows which are okay, but
I think Australian music's good. I think Australian music is very good.
I agree, but from a global perspective, like other than maybe Tame Impala, who've I think the only name that kind of pops out, who've really made
AC/DC, but that's, you know,
AC/DC long, like, long, yeah, time, yeah, yeah, 70s, 80s, right? But between that, you've had like Kylie Minogue, and that's about it. Like on a global scene, who's made some dent. Movies that you can think
apparently
of.
Apparently, Neighbours is huge, and Home and Away. Oh, was it
really?
One of the two is huge in the UK.
I only heard about them when I moved to Australia, by the way. So,
but I don't know. Like, I've just heard that, like, apparently it's huge there.
Right.
So.
I think the alternative is that we've seen a lot of actors and actresses who make it to Hollywood.
Obviously, sometimes have to fake American accents.
Exactly. Yeah. With Heath Ledger, obviously, from WA, you've got Hugh Jackman, Nicole Kidman, obviously, the big names. And recently, I think Margot Robbie, she was in one of those shows as well, either Home and Away or
Neighbours. Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So she came up from that as well. So again, from Australian perspective, I think sport is something that we're really good at exporting.
I can only think of cricket, like AFL, soccer.
True. But Australia is known as the sporting nation, right? But it sucked that we're not in the World Cup in soccer.
Terrible defeats.
Yeah, it's just sad. Especially me as a soccer fan. Hoped that, you know, I could support the team there. But anyway, I think it's and here's another point. I support England in the World Cup.
Okay, sure.
That's an influence that was through the export, you know, of Premier League. That's crazy there. And again, like, that's an influence. Like, well, I have no reason to support England other than the fact that they've brainwashed me and indoctrinated me as it was coming up. So again, like I think from a global angle, Australia is still kind of suffering, and I think they couldn't make the best use of the language as well. But in some ways, I think people look at Australia as almost like a, you know, pretty much like the other side of the coin kind of thing. Like, nobody pays a lot of attention because it's almost like, oh, it's kind of there. It's just like, you know what
it's,
I mean?
It's just so far away.
It's just so far away. It's just there. And we're used as just some of those random accent jokes or kangaroo jokes on Simpsons as their only way of being present in the scene. But yeah, look, I think going forward in the global angle, I think that's my prediction, is that we'll see a lot more of different cultures kind of rising who have been basically underrepresented over the years.
Mm. Yeah, and I think it might just take a couple of trends to discover. Something that's cool that's going on in a culture that's kind of underground. People are like, oh, what is this? This is cool. And it kind of becomes the next thing, and that might happen here and there and for a few other things. So I believe, like, with the internet and how accessible and how even the playing field is and how easy in quotes to be discovered it is, I think it might be inevitable that people from diverse places end up being the next big thing.
What about tech side of things though? Because I think that's, again, a huge player as well. If you look at some of the biggest companies in the world, it's still coming in from, you know, United States and Silicon Valley and things of that sort.
Yeah, this one's quite interesting. So if we're looking at tech, I think China is at where Japan was in the 1950s. So Japan was quite good at copying things. They were known as poor quality, but then they got better at manufacturing and really figured out that process and became better than the Americans at making things. And they were quite dominant in technology and even cars. We're still kind of very big in cars, but, like, you know, replacing all the American cars, like, in the 60s and 70s with the oil crisis, and Americans were like, what the hell? They were really freaked out during that time. But, yeah, so I think China's at that point where, like, manufacturing stuff, they do it cheap, but the quality isn't that great. But then, you know, they may go from copying to making their own original stuff, and then when that happens, then we could see a shift. But I think chips, though, that China's going to take a long time to catch up with that because that's very complex to do. So America, like, obviously is in the lead by a long shot, but I feel that they have to quite, you know, the universities and the education system, that's like the place where all of this starts. They have to really, you know, keep, because apparently China's education system is quite catching up. So it's like they really have to solidify that and fortify that for them to be in the long, in front in the long run. So, like, in the next 20 years or so. Some interesting stuff coming out of Switzerland for some reason that I've been seeing. Some medical stuff and some robotic stuff, which I wasn't expecting. But yeah, so I don't know. Like, I'd say that China has the opportunity to overtake America in technology, but some things have to go wrong for America and some things have to go right for China for that to happen. So,
yeah, I think a lot of the, like, whoever will be taking over the next big wave of tech will have to make something that's drastically different to what we already have. So I think making a brand new phone or a better phone that overtakes Apple, I don't think is enough. I think it'll have to be within a production or a commodity that's very specific to changing the way we do things. So I think electric vehicles would be a place where, I don't know if China comes up with something that's crazy good, or whoever comes up with something crazy good in that area will probably overtake, you know, a lot of the big tech side of things over the next decade. And anything of that sort, I think wearables or something that's still underserved, but kind of in that zone where we can jump. So, yeah, I predict that, unfortunately or fortunately, however you want to look at it, the current trend of America trying to hold into these tech will still be very strong. I think they'll still be the ones who kind of come up with this tech. But if, again, as you mentioned,
something I did forget to mention, that the big advantage that America has is, like, the free enterprise. It's like, you know, technically, like, ideally you should be a person that has this idea, get funding for it and make it happen. It succeeds or fails, but that, you know, that's what the structure is. But I guess in China, everything has to be reported to the CCP. There's a lot of red tape and you can't do anything you want. So I think that freedom of enterprise has served America well.
Yeah.
But apparently in some indexes, like, it shows that America is going down in terms of how easy it is to start a company. So they've got to fix that too.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. Well, I think on that note, we'll have to look at and keep our eyes and ears open over the next decade. We should do a repeat of this podcast in 2032.
And
come back and see where things are.
So. Yeah, for sure. Maybe we'll all be speaking Korean. So, all right. So, yeah, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. And we'll see you again soon. Cheers.